refraction and visual acuity and student goals are all essential to determining the starting point for magnification. So they shared tips and strategies with us. There was a lively discussion. And then in the afternoon, Emmy Fury, one of the BESBE education consultants, shared strategies on how to utilize inexpensive materials to create high contrast and portable devices for children with CVI to use in the educational and instructional environment. And then in April, our committee also invited Scott Krug, a technology specialist from New England Low Vision, to do an additional presentation on low vision devices. So staff were able to try out the devices, and we also had desktop CCTVs, small devices, text-to-speech devices, and hands-free vision magnification glasses. So we have numerous trainings scheduled for the staff, many going on, already starting this evening, actually. So the fall is chock full with really essential and critical professional development for the staff so that they can develop and maintain their skills when working with children and assessing children. And I'd also like to add that Children's Services has, I know Chris talked about the online iReport earlier, which is so exciting. We're so exciting. We're really excited about that. I'd like to add that Children's Services has been utilizing an app called JotForm for 2 years now. And this was really spearheaded by Michelle Zordon, one of our education consultants. She is amazing. And I wish she were here right now so I could say it in front of her, but she is truly amazing. So she took the initiative on this, and we piloted this 2 years ago where we started to adapt some of our programmatic forms so that they became fillable and had a tracked workflow. And that has really streamlined things for us. I know Michelle and I initially were a little hesitant, thinking, I don't know how will the staff take to this, but once they got a taste, they were really up and running. And so Michelle has collaborated with the other programs here at BESBE, as well as with other colleagues at ATS. And this summer, Michelle played a part in rolling out an ATS leave slip form so everyone can use it. It's really great. So I'm very proud of Michelle, and I just wanted to give that shout out to her and the work she's done for all of us. And starting next week, we have our annual series of fall-in services. Some of our days are combined, so they'll be working, we'll be conducting them simultaneously. So on September 27th, we have our para day and our pre-K kindergarten day. On September 28th, we have our Braille Day and our Large Print Day. And on October 2nd and 3rd will be our MIVI in-services, one for teachers and one for paraprofessionals. And then finally rounding it out on October 17th is our CVI Phase 3 in-service. So that's what we've been up to. Any questions?
Questions for Catherine?
Yes, I have one.
Steve?
I have one.
Steve.
Catherine, very good report.
Thank you.
I had two questions. 2 years ago, Eileen Akers and I did a presentation for AER and on emergency preparedness. And one of the things that we were discussing is whether this can be coordinated with some of the early teachings of the students and families, and have the kids get involved in that and have it in an IEP or whatever. Is that being considered?
So, you know, that's a good point, Steve. I know that in all of the schools, they are required to have some kind of emergency preparedness plan for all students who are on an IEP. And some of those plans, I think, are a bit more general than others. Some are more specific for the students. But if there are some specific tips or ideas you have, especially as related to the presentation you and Eileen did, I'm happy to hear them, because you know, we think that it's very important for children of all ages to take ownership of their safety. You can't rely on adults to always be there for you. So we've had some specific safety initiative, workshops and events and literacy kits in the past for our students, but you know what? It's always good to look at this topic again. So yeah, if you have any ideas to share with me, I would love to hear them.
Yeah, I think one of them, if I can take a minute, is to have the kids in their own homes check the alarm systems, you know,
yes,
things like that, sure they're up to date or whatever, or even help be part of the emergency training plan so that they have to evacuate the home. Because we do this a lot with the Windsor Fire Department, because as you know, October is emergency training month.
Yes.
Get out the whole month, so I don't know if you can take any advantage of that, but it varies from town to town, and that's why Irene and I bought that whole issue up.
I think that's a good one to revisit, because we used to be heavily involved in fire safety, and we've taken a break for the last few years, but a previous consultant, Lisa Pruner, and I actually got a fire safety grant, believe it or not, and we still have some money left to use. So, yes, you've put a few ideas in my head. Thank you, Stephen. But I didn't mean to interrupt. Sorry, go on.
The other one is, it was mentioned earlier that Noreen Greece has an astronomy program for people who are blind. You might want to consider that for possible training.
Oh, yeah. Okay, her name is really familiar. She's had that program for a while, right?
Yes. Yeah, I interviewed her on Chris Radio.
Yeah.
You might want to revisit that for some time in the future to get the kids involved in their environment.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. All right, I'm jotting her name down right now. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Al.
You're welcome, Steve. Anyone else? Questions for Catherine? Catherine, thank you for an excellent and delightful report, I might add.
You're welcome, Al.
Let's move on to the next item of the agenda then. Apologize there. I think I just might have muted myself for a minute. We have the budget update. Carol, you have the floor.
All right, thanks, Al. The budget was sent out with a meeting invite, so would you rather people just ask me questions about it, or did you want me to go through and, like, read the whole thing again? You have a preference?
How about just a thumbnail hitting the highlights, and then we can take questions, because I think that will remind people of anything they might have read.
All right, so the budget, we're in quarter eight of this is vocational rehabilitation funds. So we're in quarter eight of federal fiscal year 22, and so we were allowed to carry that grant over another year, which is why we're in quarter eight. So that ends September 30, and then we'll have 90 days to liquidate. And that grant was about $3.6 million, and so we have about $1.4 million remaining. And that was early mid-August when I was preparing this, so the amount remaining has changed because we've, obviously authorized and paid for things. So of that grant, our pre-ed's reserve is 15% of that, so it's roughly $545,000, and we have about $189,000 or so remaining, which I do know that amount is also less now because we've done a lot of pre-ed's programs this month, so that's going to go down quite a bit. And that runs on a federal fiscal year. So then we have adult services, runs on a state fiscal year and a federal fiscal year, depends on if you're over or under age 55. So for the first quarter installment of those state funds for under 55, I did set this up so anyone over 55 could also use it. But our first installment, we get those quarterly, was about a little over $7,000. And we have already used some of those funds up, which is good. And then our over 55, our older individuals who are blind grant, we have about, for client service, $24,000 is what we started with. And we have, $1,000 or less remaining. So we've done a good job at spending our money, and that is federal fiscal year 23. If everybody can keep all this straight, it's kind of tough. our children's services budget that also runs on a state fiscal year. And so looking at the whole year's allotment, the anticipated allotment, and I need to verify the amount, but it was roughly $4.9 million. And we're anticipated to have a surplus of about $260,000. And so we spent, you know, money, salaries and stuff in children's services, and doing a lot of cool stuff with activities and with the teachers and training. And so our surplus is probably down to, I don't know, $200,000. And I know teachers are going to the AER conference, so it'll be down to, I don't know, $180,000 or so. Those are rough numbers. So that was the budget report that I had sent.
Questions for Carol regarding the budget?
This is Eileen. Will we be sent an updated budget report?
I can't. This, we're in the middle of the last.
Oh, no, no, I don't mean right now. No, I mean after October 1st or something like that.
I could prepare one. Don't let me forget. Because, you know, once the year ends, it gets into report, federal report time. And so we have deadlines to get those done. So those would be my primary priority to make sure we submit those on time.
Of course.
But definitely by December, I will definitely have a report on those end of year reports and what those look like. Because they should be.
December meeting sounds like an excellent time to receive that report then.
Okay.
Great.
Any other questions regarding the budget? Hearing none, let's move on to the next item, and that is the legislative update. Jen, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you. So we are already planning for the 2024 session. For those of you that may or may not know, in even-numbered years, it's a shorter session, beginning in early February and ending by early May. So that means that the Constitution and the legislature's joint rules restrict the types of bills that can be introduced to those that relate to budgetary, revenue, and financial matters, to any subject proposed by a legislative committee, and anything certified as an emergency by the House Speaker and the Senate President Pro Tem. So, also based on guidance provided in August, the Governor's Office and the Office of Policy and Management have modified this year's agency legislative submission process to include two new questions. The first being how the proposal connects to agencies' 10-year visions, and the second being how agencies will measure whether the proposal accomplishes its goals, so trying to be more strategic in legislation. As you may recall from my last update, several task forces or working groups were established in the last session, which ADS is a part of, and they've began their work recently. The first being to study and make recommendations on the Elderly Nutrition Program, also known as Meals on Wheels, that has met once and is meeting at, their second meeting is next week. The second, to study minimum standards for the timely repair of motorized wheelchairs. They've had two meetings, including the second one yesterday. And lastly, the Accessible Parking Advisory Council, which is under the Department of Motor Vehicles, they are still gathering appointments to that council, so they have not yet met, but hopefully will be doing so this fall. And so all of those groups are generally expected to report their recommendations out prior to the start of session, so we would be expecting proposals to be coming out of those. Other than that, ADS is still developing what we'll be submitting, and so stay tuned about that.
Questions for Jen?
I have one.
Steve?
Jen, thank you for the report. Anything on the hiring of a dementia person to do the research in the state of Connecticut on services needed by this group?
So the dementia coordinator position was posted. The closing date ended, I believe, September 5th. They've been screening through those applications received. I talked to HR and they said that it was a healthy pool of candidates, so that's promising. I don't believe they've held any interviews yet, so we'll stay tuned, but I would imagine that is probably, you know, in the ballpark of maybe by October, hopefully they'll have identified a candidate. Your question about the, sorry, what was the second part of your question?
No, I was just wondering what that will include as far as the research piece of it. My understanding was the person was supposed to establish some sort of a task force or something and provide research. Is that correct?
There have been separately, so the dementia coordinator position was meant to be like a statewide coordinator to kind of administratively, you know, understand what we're currently providing, make connections, that sort of thing. Separately, though, there was a couple of studies, one on the prevalence of one was on communication access in medical settings for people who are deaf, hard of hearing, or deaf blind. We are still working on that. And then the other one was the prevalence of dementia for people who also have the higher prevalence of dementia for people with an intellectual or developmental disability. And so we are still working on that. Those were the two studies.
I was asking that because in our retirement community, we have a number of people in the dementia unit. And I was just concerned about what's going to happen in the future and how we can better serve or better handle these types of situations. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Jen? Actually, I do have a question for you, Jen, but it's peripheral and partly because you have the bad luck of being here and you might be able to shed some light on this particular issue. With regard to all the handicap parking permits I see hanging on people's mirrors, people who forget to turn them into DMV once they have a relative who no longer has a need for that. Has the DMV been studying that matter, A, and B, are there any proposals to address it?
I think that's exactly why that Accessible Parking Advisory Council was established, to look at those sorts of problems. So their charge is to deter, detect, and prevent fraud and misuse of those placards. So I do know that the DMV regularly gets updates from the death registry. And supposedly, if someone has a placard that is on that death registry, they're supposed to somehow, you know, send a notice, you know, to turn in the placard. But obviously, you know, maybe more needs to be done on that front. So I think that's exactly what the council will be looking at.
Thanks, Jen.
Sure.
Any other questions?
Question.
Yes, Steve.
Can I ask you about that? Eleanor, my wife, has... when we go out, she's noticed like two cars parking in the handicap parking. That's not what it was meant for. And Eleanor's been noticing that more and more, and also a different kind of handicap pass and hanging that looks similar to, you know, the real one is being used as well. So I hope the committee will consider those aspects.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. I would assume that there will probably be some sort of maybe public comment period at those meetings. So I'm sure you're welcome to attend and raise those concerns, but I'm happy to pass that along as well. Yeah.
Thank you.
Excellent. All right. Any other questions for Jen?
I do. Yeah, it's Mary.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have observed the same thing. People seem to think it's okay to park two cars, you know, one in the striped area for access and one in the actual spot. I also have seen a green tag. All I could see was the color. I didn't get to read it. I don't know. Is there a new designation or just have they changed anything or added a green and white tag in addition to the blue one? And if they have, is a it a different designation, or is it a counterfeit? I have no idea. You know anything?
I'm not aware of a color change. I know that they did change recently the wording. Now it's called an accessible parking permit rather than handicap. I don't think there was any color change, but maybe that is some other type of pass I'm not aware of. I can ask the DMV about that.
Can you also give us the email, or who do we contact if we would like to speak during a public comment session to this council meeting?
They haven't begun yet, so I don't know who the council chair or anything is going to be. I guess we would just contact the legislative liaison for DMV at the current moment, but once the council's actually fully formed, then we would have the chair we could probably contact, or the administrator. So if you had a question now, I could forward it along to that legislative liaison, who is Jim Politis. Or we could just wait till the council's formed.
When the council is formed, can you give us the contact information so that we can be on their email list and be able to speak in public comment?
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you, Jim.
Sure.
And Jim, this is Carol. I know Besby's had quite a few calls lately about the handicap placards, and the DMV told us there is an expiration date on them now, but I was confused if it was for the accessible parking placards or if it was the handicapped ones, and you know if that had anything to do with the color changes, because we've been getting a lot of calls. I know Andrew was looking into it, but I don't recall if he's gotten any answers from the DMV. So, I mean, if you're going to talk to the DMV, if you could help us figure that out too, because, yeah, I wasn't aware of much of this.
Yeah,
I guess another thing to that, if I may, because I know mine, I have to renew it every 6 years in person. There is an expiration date on it. Not that it's going to actually expire, but you do have to renew it by that date. I don't know.
I also wanted to put out there, that the green parking pass, I just Googled it, looks like it's a permit for cars, you know, that are green, you know, like electric cars and things like that. So it may not have anything to do with being, you know, handicapped. It's just, at least that's what I'm seeing online.
Well, so maybe it's the folks that need to park in those charging station spots.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, they may be using it incorrectly and taking advantage, but I just want to sort of put that out there that there are green parking passes that have to do with, you know, ecologically sound options for driving and whatnot.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm happy to ask about the expiration issue. I know for a window of time they were issuing lifetime placards, but I guess those tend to be abused more than the ones that have to be renewed. And so I believe the council's charge, I believe the charge was supposed to specifically look at those as well.
And I believe they did that a long time ago, Jen, because I know the last two or three times I've had to renew it, it did have a 6-year expiration date.
Okay, yeah.
Any other questions for Jen? Hearing on, let's move to points to the good and welfare. I had a couple of items, if you will indulge me. I have two requests for board members. If you have a project in which you have an interest that would help further Besby's mission, by all means, please don't hesitate to A, bring it up to your chairman, and B, if it involves staff help, please make sure you get in touch, go through Carol, and make sure that you have at least knowledge and approval of the supervisor if you need to borrow any of their staff for any projects in which you're interested. And I would encourage you to to think of any projects that you think would be of interest to the BESBE community, and that the advisory board could help the bureau with moving forward. The other request I have is that those board members who have the capability of going on camera, I'd like to request that you remain on camera during the meeting. This is a public meeting, and we do represent the public. And I think that it is appropriate that the public should be able to see what we look like. So in keeping with that spirit, I would like to ask you that when you are at the meeting to please remain on camera, be sure to mute your microphones when you are not speaking, and I would appreciate the courtesy. With that, I open up the floor to any others who have points to the good and welfare.
This is Eileen one thing that I got reminded about addressing to Carol, one of the issues that had been raised previously was efficient use of BESBE drivers for staff who need a driver. Has that situation improved?
Good question, Eileen. I've been doing the schedules for the special assistants and blind staff, I think, since April of this year, and I do believe it has gotten better. The blind staff are doing a really good job at scheduling, you know, multiple appointments on a, you know, in one day, and they're really now working to try to make those appointments geographically in, you know, the same area so that way they can maximize their time. You know, of course, it's the summer, staff are taking vacation and different things, so there was more special assistance that were available in that time. But I think as a whole, looking at the big picture, it has gotten better. Chris, most of the blind staff, you know, are in adult services, so if you have heard anything else, you can share.
Yeah, I mean, I think my understanding is that all of the staff with legal blindness are able to now request support from a special assistant at least 3 days per week. And considering that in adult services, we have generally expected the field staff to be out between 3 and 4 days a week. What I would say is that, and then if staff are available, if the special assistant staff are available, the staff with legal blindness can nonetheless request their support for a fourth day a week, or even a fifth, if that's something that they would like. So I think that we've made really good progress in, you know, considering that we now have, you know, six staff with legal blindness who go out in the field and are part of the staff supervised by one of the three of us, Mary or Catherine or I. I would say that's pretty good progress considering that we have only three special assistants. So, I think that their support services are being utilized pretty, extensively at present.
Thank you. My other question is for you, Al. If my math is right, we have 8 voting board members. One of them has missed many meetings. First of all, of course, the big concern is filling vacancies. But the other concern is how long do we keep somebody's name as a board member when they miss many meetings?
Yeah, okay, that is a question. The statute does state that a board member who misses 3 meetings or more than half the meetings in any year is considered to have resigned. Having said that, it's a difficult situation to fire a volunteer. You never want to fire a volunteer because, A, they're volunteers. They're doing this out of the kindness of their hearts. And B, there's no enforcement mechanism. I mean, it's one thing to say, I know it was fashionable for a time there to make sure everybody went to their meetings back in the early